Welcome to Evening Under Lamplight, the show that invites you to attend on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge, with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. Let me know how you're getting on with the shows, and let me know any suggestions for future shows at lamplight@cambridge105.fm and catch the archives at momentsunderlamplight.com. Before we begin our show this evening, Under Lamplight, I want to give you a quick rundown of some events yet to come at this year's Cambridge Summer Music Festival, which is entering its third week and will come to an end on August 4th. Now, on Thursday, August 2nd, the Scottish tenor Nicky Spence will be performing in the Fitzwilliam College Auditorium at 7:30. Among other items, he will be singing a few selections from Vaughan Williams' Songs of Travel, which is of particular interest to us here, because these are songs, or poems rather, written by Robert Louis Stevenson. Nicky is also going to sing a few Burns songs. He's a charming person, not just a powerful and sweet singer, and he'll be speaking to us in a pre-concert chat. On Friday, August 3rd, you can hear Machaca, an international ensemble, guitar, violin, bass, percussion, accordion, cello. They will perform music from Argentina, Venezuela, Brazil, and Cuba at 7:30 at the Guildhall, a very fine venue if you don't know it. And on Saturday the 4th, the finale of the festival presents Yves Loiseau singing the songs of Edith Piaf at the West Road Concert Hall at 8 o'clock. Look up CambridgeSummerMusic.com, that's one word, CambridgeSummerMusic.com, for further details. And now let's move on to this evening's program. Well, here we are at the end of July, coming to the intensity of summer, the time when schools just let out, at least here in Britain. In America, for instance, schools let out more than a month ago. And time for people to feel entitled to a holiday, a vacation, vacating their everyday places of work to go, well, to go somewhere else. It's a time of idling, and that's our theme this evening under Lamplight. And so before we go further, let's attune ourselves to the idea of idling with the following short song. You might be puzzled for the first few seconds, but suddenly I know you're going to sit up and smile in joyful remembrance. At least I hope you will. I do. Okay, that was the theme song for Fraggle Rock, a show that celebrated the ethos of Fraggles, who expel worries for another day and just let the music play. They just sit around and do nothing, except make sure the water is good for swimming or sing and dance, unlike the doozers who get their kicks by being anything but idle. They work non-stop, little drones that they are. Now, as I was thinking about this theme, it occurred to me that there are two kinds of idling, positive and negative. Idleness is the state of doing nothing, and we can become idle for negative reasons, as an escape from drudgery or stress, or for positive reasons, stilling ourselves so that we can become more sensitive and attentive to the world within and around us. We'll look at both kinds this evening. Let's start with negative idling. I said a moment ago that this is the time for people to go off on vacation, to have a holiday. Some people take a positive delight in relaxing on holiday, but perhaps more often the pleasure of the holiday arises mainly from its being a relief from everyday life. I've got to get away from that rat race back home. I'm not saying that this holiday idling is not pleasant, just that it can be motivated by the negative desire to get away. And here's an example from the Kinks. The song Holiday comes from the album Muswell Hillbillies, which, as I've said before on Evening Under Lamplight, constantly teeters on the edge of insanity. Here is someone, oh, so glad they sent me away. We see the holiday explicitly as something therapeutic. Of course, being a holiday in an English seaside resort, the weather's pretty bad and the water's polluted, but he had to leave the city because it nearly broke me down. I'm leaving insecurity behind me. The environmental pressures got me down. I don't need no sedatives to pull me round. I don't need no sleeping pills to help me sleep sound. Given these needs, it hardly matters that the quality of the idling, what the quality of the idling is like, as long as it provides something different from city life. He's determined to have a good time no matter what. The sea's an open sewer, but I really couldn't care. I'm breathing through my mouth so I don't have to sniff the air. Apparently, the song was recorded through a 10-year-old microphone, which gives an added feel of being out of touch with the world.
So glad they sent me away to have a little holiday today. Holiday, holiday. And I'm just standing on the end of a pier, hoping and dreaming you are here to share my little holiday. Looking in the sky, sometimes I think that sun ain't never coming out. I'd rather be hiding in that dirty old town. I had to leave the city, cause it nearly brought me down. Oh, holiday. Oh, what a lovely day today. Asking her, get down on my little knees and pray. Thank you, Lord. Thank heaven. Salt gets in my blisters and sand gets in my ears. The sea's an open sewer, but I really couldn't care. I'm breathing through my mouth so I don't have to sniff the air. Oh, holiday. Oh, what a lovely day today. I'm also glad they sent me away to have a little holiday.
Holiday by the Kinks. The resort is so polluted and he's just blistered his back from sunburn, and the salt from the sea just makes it worse. And so where's the pleasure in this idle life? The horrors that are driving him mad follow him even here. He can't win. But here's someone who can win, sort of, and only temporarily. I'm not sure we've played Sir Harry Lauder here before, but here he is, celebrating breakfast in your bed on Sunday morning. Lauder was a music hall star who played the comic stereotype Scotsman, coming out on stage in kilts with a huge sporran and a huge tam o' shanter, staggering as if incoherently drunk. His character, like most comic stereotypes, was pretty offensive. But in a song like this, we get a touch of something more serious, that wee break on Sundays from the grueling weekday jobs in the factory or the pits. A lie-in and a leisurely breakfast. The wife gets no leisure, though, you'll notice. And there's the pseudo-high diction as he lies between the sheets, his bed adorning.
And I never, never grieve. I take things very easy. What I can't take, I leave. And I work the whole week round from early morn till late at night. And on Saturday, I eagerly look forward with delight to beautiful Sunday. I wish it would never come Monday, 'cause I lie between the sheets, my bed adorning. Oh, it's very nice. Yes, it's very, very nice to get your breakfast in your bed on Sunday morning. What joy, what great delight it is to hear the kirk bells ring. I wouldn't miss their welcome sound, no, not for anything. When they commence to ring, arise, I go and I have a bit squinter of the windy. But if I think it's going to rain, I just fill my pipe and licked it, and I go back to bed again. It's a terrible thing to rise among the blankets, especially on a frosty morning, eh? Oh, I say, did ever any of you chaps ever waken on a beautiful Sunday morning about 6:30 and then open your eyes? If you were able to open them. And there you're lying there, you know. Did you ever lie there and realize that you didn't have to rise and go to your work? Isn't it a lovely feeling? Oh, man. Oh, dear. Oh, it's lovely, man. You lie there, you know, and you hear the canary singing in the room, you know. And there the white cheese in the kitchen, you know, washing the dishes and breaking them. And you're lying in your bed, you know, and you can hear the ham and eggs curling in the pan. Oh, mind, I'm telling you. Beautiful Sunday. I wish it would never come Monday, 'cause I lie between the sheets, my bed adorning. Oh, it's very nice. Man, it's very, very nice to get your breakfast in your bed on Sunday morning. Beautiful Sunday. I wish it would never come Monday, 'cause I lie between the sheets, my bed adorning. Oh, it's very nice. It's very, very nice to get your breakfast in. One of the treats of civilization is to get your breakfast in your bed on Sunday morning. Aye, aye. Ah, well. Goodbye.
Aye, well, one of the treats of civilization is to get your breakfast in your bed on Sunday morning, he concludes. But of course, it is the civilization itself, with its dehumanizing work practices, that makes it necessary to seize this one morning of idleness. And apparently he's no going to the kirk the day. It's completely secular idleness. But here's a sample of religious idleness. Except for very observant frommers, few of us today have much experience of Sabbath rest, a day when all work is forbidden. Shabbos is the holiest holiday in the Jewish calendar. Can you imagine having the holiest holiday coming around every week? And it wasn't like some goyish Gentile idea of holiness, a time of solemnity and deprivation, but a time for joyful celebration, sacred idleness, we might say. I want to play you a Hasidic song in Yiddish, a language that we've heard before on Evening Under Lamplight. It's sung by Avraham Fried and a chorus of Kinderlech kids, whose joyful innocence I find particularly touching. The Hasidic movement was known from its beginnings for its ecstatic celebrations with singing and dancing, and we get an example of that here. The song is called Preparing for Shabbos. You won't be able to catch the words except the regularly repeated joyful Shabbos Kodesh, Holy Sabbath. It's a kind of catalogue song running through all the things people do to prepare for this weekly celebration. Unlike Harry Lauder's factory worker who prepares for his day of rest by getting foo, drunk, the night before, here everyone pitches in with shopping, salting the fish, chopping the cabbage, bringing in the water, activities for the ganze mishpucha, the whole family. And it's a groisse zecheia, a great merit to do all this, this idleness for a higher cause. Jeder einer will sein heilig in dem Shabbos Kodesh. Everyone wants to be holy on Shabbos Kodesh. In a way, this religious joy places Shabbos rest under our category of positive idling, but all too often, like Harry Lauder's Sunday in Bed, this time of idleness is made all the sweeter by its contrast to the oppressive world that has to be negotiated in the other 6 days of the week. Now, attend to this preparation for Shabbos idleness and catch the holy joy pervading it. And look out for the kids' voices when they come in.
Na Kopf und aber Heime als Lekovic Shabbos und mit Ave und mit Heime als Lekovic Shabbos. Ay 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 Shabbos Kodesh, Shabbos Kodesh, kriegten sich jeden zum Shabbos Kodesh, stark zufrieden mit Shabbos Kodesh. Jeder in der Wille seine heilig in dem Shabbos Kodesh. Jeder in der Villa heilig in dem Shabbos Kodesh. Oh ja, geräusche Schie, ja, na liehe, jeder riet mit der Seine, je gehe, fest und fern.
Shabbos Kodesh.
Was man kann fern.
Shabbos Kodesh.
Ein was mehr laufen, was mehr kaufen, Shabbos.
Shabbos.
Licht und Geräten.
Shabbos.
Putzen, kneten. Hey, als Bedarfen, die Spinnwebs warfen, der Messer scharfen. Nur es so, vor allem entheigen, als Lekovic Shabbos. Nicht in der Balle Boste, fahr die Jägen, als Lekovic Shabbos. Agroises hier. Analie, jeder Balle Boste mit dir je gehe. Fest und fern, Shabbos Kodesh. Was ist meine Konfern?
Shabbos Kodesh.
Ei, was mehr nie jen, was mehr ziehe jen, Shabbos.
mich alle.
Love
it, Shabbos. Essen uns alle.
Okay, that's Shabbos Chodesh. Well, you won't hear a song like that on many other Cambridge radio stations, or many other stations at all, I suppose. But we are all things to all people here on Evening Under Lamplight. And to keep us on our toes here, let's move on to something completely different. Here's another song about idling, but only hypothetical. It's a fantasy about a land of plenty with no oppression and no need to work. The food is all provided for you. And who are you? A hobo, that's who. And you're dreaming of arriving at those Big Rock candy mountains. Burl Ives turned this into a sanitized children's song in the late 1940s, but before that it was a much rougher and, I think, much more poignant song. Listen to the details of what the poor hobo, always scrounging for a place to sleep and a bit to eat, will find at the Big Rock Candy Mountains. There are crystal fountains, not muddy ditch water, and you don't have to keep humiliating yourself for a handout. The handouts grow on bushes. The boxcars are empty, not already filled with other hobos who want to throw you out, and the weather's always nice. Do you need a smoke? Just take what you want from the cigarette trees. And you don't have to be afraid that you're going to be turfed out. The cops can't chase you away. They all have wooden legs. And the watchdogs are harmless with rubber teeth. You can get fruit from the farmer's plentiful trees and sleep in the barns full of fresh hay. We're told, too, that you never change your socks. I think that refers to the fact that you're not having to stand around in puddles or walking around with leaky boots with socks always damp. Nope, none of that up there in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. And the little streams of alcohol come trickling down the rocks. I like the detail that the brakemen on the trains, the ones who despise you trying to bum a free ride, the brakemen here have to respect you. No more of that humiliation. Now the brakemen have to tip their hats. This is hobo heaven, man. And then the two lakes you can paddle around in and partake of, one lake of stew, the other of whiskey. There are jails here. Where are there not any jails? But these are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. And best of all, no shovels, axes, saws, or picks. That is, no tools to do any jobs with, because they hanged the jerk who invented work. It's idleness all day. Here's Harry McClintock, who claimed to have written the song in the 1890s and recorded it a little cleaned up. He got rid, for instance, of the boy prostitutes, and recorded it in the 1920s. You may have heard him sing this in the film O Brother, Where Art Thou? Now attend to it in this new context.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes, and you sleep out every night. Where the boxcars all are empty, and the sun shines every day, on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the cops have wooden legs, and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth, and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit, and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall, the wind don't blow, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come a-trickling down the rocks. The brakemen have to tip their hats, and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and a whiskey, too. You can paddle all around them in a big canoe in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the big rock candy mountains, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work in the big rock candy mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the big rock candy mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the big rock candy mountains.
Well, that was Harry McClintock and the Big Rock Candy Mountains. And this is Robert Louis Abrahamson and Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge Community Radio, Cambridge 105. We've been looking at some negative aspects of idling, that is, examples of relaxing and doing nothing in order to get away from drudgery or oppression in other parts of life. We'll move on to the positive aspects in a minute, but there's one more song I want to share with you, with thanks to Leslie in Bordeaux for having introduced me to it. It's called Sympathique, sung by Pink Martini, a group I'd not heard of before, but who have caught me with their wide range of styles, here giving us a song in the tradition of, say, Edith Piaf, whose songs you'll be able to hear, remember, on Saturday, August 4th at West Road Concert Hall at 8 o'clock. The lyrics, written by the founder of Pink Martini, Thomas Lauderdale, and China Forbes, who also sings here, develop a few lines from Guillaume Apollinaire's poem Hotel. They present a world-weary singer, caged in her room, resisting the demands of the outside world. Je ne veux pas travailler, she says. I don't want to work. She also doesn't want to déjeuner, to eat. Je veux seulement oublier. I just want to forget. Et puis je fume. And afterwards I smoke. And we can imagine that elegant, insouciant way she would be smoking, the deep inhaling and exhaling of the smoke merging with a long sigh of boredom. She's had too much of love, she tells us. She's not proud of all this. It's better to be sympathique and engage with her admirers, but this isn't her way. Here is the idler in the form of the jaded sophisticate, weighed down not by oppression but ennui. And yet her very way of expressing her desire to ignore us is so attractive in itself that perhaps this ennui is a pose, and she's actually working hard in this oblique way to win over our sympathy. Attends.
Ma chambre a la forme d'une cage. Le soleil passe son bras par la fenêtre. Les chasseurs à ma porte comme les petits soldats qui veulent me prendre. Je ne veux pas travailler, je ne veux pas déjeuner, je veux seulement oublier et puis je fume. Déjà j'ai connu le parfum de l'amour. Un million de roses n'embaumerait pas autant. Maintenant une seule fleur dans mes entourages me rend malade. Je ne veux pas travailler, je ne veux pas déjeuner, je veux seulement oublier et puis je fume. Je ne suis pas fière de ça. C'est magnifique être sympathique, mais je ne le connais jamais. Je ne veux pas travailler, non, je ne veux pas déjeuner. Je veux seulement oublier, et puis je fume. Thank you. je ne le connais jamais. Je ne veux pas travailler, non, je ne veux pas déjeuner. Je veux seulement oublier. Et puis je fus.
Pink Martini and Sympathique. The ultimate, I suppose, in decadent idleness. But now it's time to look at positive idleness. To pivot us into this second aspect of idling, I'm going to bring in our Dylan song, Watching the River Flow. It's a curious adaptation of our theme. Here he is, sitting on a bank of sand, watching the river flow past him. A quiet, idyllic scene, even the trucks are rolling slow. But he doesn't want this idling around. He wishes he were back in the city instead of this old bank of sand. Because back in the city is the one I love so close at hand. Well, sometimes it just works out that way, doesn't it? Back in the city, there are all the people disagreeing, crying in the streets, really shook up. But if that's where his lover is, then he's itching to get away from this relaxation and return to the oppressive city. But as long as he has to stay here, idling on the riverbank, he knows the best course is just to sit here so contentedly and watch the river flow. Here's the song, with the driving beat and edgy voice belying the restful idleness.
What's the matter with me? I don't have much to say. Daylight sneaking through the window and I'm still in this old night cafe. Walking to and fro beneath the moon, out to where the trucks are rolling slow. Sit down on this bank of sand and watch the river flow. Wish I was back in the city, but instead of this old bank of sand, with the sun beating down over the chimney tops and the one I love so close at hand. If I had wings and I could fly, I know where I would go. But right now I just sit here so contentedly and watch the river flow. People disagreeing on just about everything, yeah. Makes you stop and wonder why. Why only yesterday I saw somebody on the street who just couldn't help but cry. Oh, but this old river keeps on rolling though. No matter what gets in the way and which way the wind does blow. And as long as it does, I just sit here and watch the river flow. Watching the river flow. Watching the river flow. But I the river flows.
It's hard to picture Bob Dylan being idle. I imagine he sometimes sits still, but his inquisitive mind is always alert to take in what is going on around him and within him, transforming it all into song. The aim was song, as Robert Frost says, transforming wild experience into measure, into form. And that's not idleness. But yet, idleness surely does come into it, positive idleness, as we're defining it. We need a certain kind of idleness, call it stillness, to be able to attend to what's going on. Only then can we take its measure and turn it into song or into anything else worth experiencing. If we get too distracted by things we have to do, we will miss what's going on around us. Only the idle are able to attend. And to be idle like this, we need a certain inner strength, which comes, perhaps, from keeping on the right side of sanity, not being overwhelmed by our fantasies and obsessions. As G.K. Chesterton said, the sick man, that is, the madman, is not strong enough to be idle. Well, one way to put this is to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. It is not dying. Lay down all thoughts, surrender to the void. It is shining. That you may see the meaning of within, it is being. And this, then, is the way to play the game existence to the end of the beginning. But you know this song, and who am I to preempt John Lennon? Those who enjoy positive idleness are content that tomorrow never knows. They are here and now. And here and now are the Beatles at the peak of their psychedelic sound.
We'll be right back.
There's John Lennon, influenced by the Tibetan Book of the Dead, probably via Timothy Leary, Richard Alpert, Ram Dass, and Ralph Metzner's The Psychedelic Experience, which advised, when in doubt, relax, turn off your mind, float downstream. But there's an older American tradition of idling or loafing. One of the earliest specifically American literary heroes was Rip Van Winkle, who became famous for his, well, extended idleness, sleeping on for years and years. And then Henry David Thoreau promoted idleness as a richer way to spend one's life than toiling away just to earn money. Excessive work coarsens us. We have to prove we're tough by the amount of work we do. We have no time for other people. We turn into machines, trying to work to our full capacity, impatiently dismissing our own limitations and thus closing ourselves off from the inner growth that comes only from facing our ignorance. We should be less hard on ourselves and we'll get farther. Our humanity grows in idleness, not in pressured work. Or, to give us Thoreau's own words here, most men, even in this comparatively free country, through mere ignorance and mistake, are so occupied with the factitious cares and superfluously coarse labors of life that its finer fruits cannot be plucked by them. Their fingers, from excessive toil, are too clumsy and tremble too much for that. Actually, the laboring man has not leisure for a true integrity day by day. He cannot afford to sustain the manliest relations to men. His labor would be depreciated in the market. He has no time to be anything but a machine. How can he remember well his ignorance, which his growth requires, who has so often to use his knowledge? We should feed and clothe him gratuitously sometimes and recruit him with our cordials before we judge of him. The finest qualities of our nature, like the bloom on fruits, can be preserved only by the most delicate handling. Yet we do not treat ourselves, nor one another, thus tenderly. The other great American writer celebrating idling is Walt Whitman, who opens his Song of Myself with a kind of hymn to taking it easy, not working to make money, but loafing and observing a spear of summer grass, a path to true enlightenment. I wanted to play you the wonderful reading of the poem by Orson Welles, but I couldn't convert my tape cassette or find an MP3 of the recording. So I'll read the lines myself. I don't mind, and I hope you won't either. I celebrate myself, and what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. The smoke of my own breath echoes, ripples, buzzed whispers. Love root, silk thread, crotch and vine, my respiration and inspiration, the beating of my heart, the passing of blood and air through my lungs, the sniff of green leaves and dry leaves, and of the shore and dark-colored sea rocks and of hay in the barn, the sound of the belched words of my voice, words loosed to the eddies of the wind, a few light kisses, a few embraces, a reaching around of arms, the play of shine and shade on the trees as the supple boughs wag, the delight alone or in the rush of the streets or along the fields and hillsides, the feeling of health, the full noon trill, the song of me rising from bed and meeting the sun. Have you reckoned 1,000 acres much? Have you reckoned the earth much? Have you practiced so long to learn to read? Have you felt so proud to get at the meaning of poems? Stop this day and night with me, and you shall possess the origin of all poems. You shall possess the good of the earth and sun. There are millions of suns left. You shall no longer take things at second or third hand, nor look through the eyes of the dead, nor feed on the specters in books. You shall not look through my eyes either, nor take things from me. You shall listen to all sides and filter them from yourself. Whew. Well, there was Walt Whitman, showing us how to be positively idle, open to all things, from the smoke of my own breath to the origins of poems, and showing us, too, what we gain from such open idleness. We learn to perceive from our own eyes and find the truth for ourselves. This is the origin of all poems, he says, both for the poet and the reader of the poem. And thus we shall possess the good of the earth and the sun. And one more example of classic American loafing, this time from Mark Twain. Huckleberry Finn is a child of Whitman, a constant loafer, and when he and Jim escape from civilization and spend their days on a raft on the Mississippi River, sleeping and fishing by day, traveling by night, we see one of the idyllic moments in American literature. Here's just a very short extract from Hal Holbrook's wonderful reading from Huck Finn. It's lovely to live on a raft.
It's lovely to live on a raft. We lay in our backs and smoke our pipes, looking away into the sky. Not a cloud in it. Sky looks ever so deep when you lay on your back in the moonshine. I never knowed it before. And how fur a body can hear on the water sits night. And once or twice a night we'd see a steamboat slipping along in the dark. And every now and again she'd belch a whole world of sparks up out of her chimney. And they would rain down in the river and look awful pretty. Then she'd turn a corner and her lights would wink out and her powwow shut off and leave the river still again.
The world would say that Huck is wasting his time, not getting anything done, just killing time on the raft, idling. But in fact, after this passage about loafing comes a profound discussion about slavery and the battle between what society teaches us is right and what our conscience tells us is right. Only someone unencumbered with the need to rush off to work could have the time to go so deep within. Huck shows himself a self-taught scholar of moral philosophy, and the word scholar comes from the Greek word for leisure. All scholastic endeavor is, in this sense, the product of leisure hours. And it's no mistake that we find Robert Louis Stevenson echoing these American ideas. Stevenson was one of the first people in Britain to promote the ideas of Thoreau and Whitman. And as he told Mark Twain, he read Huckleberry Finn with avid enjoyment, and when he finished the book, he turned back to page one and read it all over again. One of Stevenson's most popular essays, influenced heavily by these American ideas, was his Apology for Idlers. I'll read you some of it now. Extreme busyness, whether at school or college, kirk or market, is a symptom of deficient vitality. And a faculty for idleness implies a catholic appetite and a strong sense of personal identity. There is a sort of dead-alive, hackneyed people about who are scarcely conscious of living except in the exercise of some conventional occupation. Bring these fellows into the country or set them aboard ship, and you will see how they pine for their desk or their study. They have no curiosity. They cannot give themselves over to random provocations. They do not take pleasure in the exercise of their faculties for its own sake. And unless necessity lays about them with a stick, they will even stand still. It's no good speaking to such folk. They cannot be idle. Their nature is not generous enough, and they pass those hours in a sort of coma which are not dedicated to furious moiling in the gold mill. when they do not require to go to the office, when they are not hungry and have no mind to drink, the whole breathing world is a blank to them. If they have to wait for an hour or so for a train, they fall into a stupid trance with their eyes open. To see them, you would suppose there was nothing to look at and no one to speak with. You would imagine they were paralyzed or alienated, and yet very possibly they are hard workers in their own way and have good eyesight for a flaw in a deed or a turn of the market. They have been to school and college, but all the time they had their eye on the medal. They have gone about in the world and mixed with clever people, but all the time they were thinking of their own affairs. If a man's soul were not too small to begin with, they have dwarfed and narrowed theirs by a life of all work and no play, until here they are at 40, with a listless attention, a mind vacant of all material of amusement, and not one thought to rub against another while they wait for the train. Before he was breeched, he might have clambered on the boxes. When he was 20, he would have stared at the girls. But now the pipe is smoked out, the snuff box empty, and my gentleman sits bolt upright upon a bench with lamentable eyes. This does not appeal to me as being a success in life. But it is not only the person himself who suffers from his busy habits, but his wife and children, his friends and relations, and down to the very people he sits with in a railway carriage or an omnibus. Perpetual devotion to what a man calls his business is only to be sustained by perpetual neglect of many other things. He sows hurry and reaps indigestion. He puts a vast deal of activity out to interest and receives a large measure of nervous derangement in return. Either he absents himself entirely from all fellowship and lives a recluse in a garret with carpet slippers and a leaden inkpot, or he comes among people swiftly and bitterly, in a contraction of his whole nervous system, to discharge some temper before he returns to work. I do not care how much or how well he works. This fellow is an evil feature in other people's lives. They would be happier if he were dead.
I'm sitting by the side of a river, underneath a pale blue sky. I've got no need to worry, I'm in no hurry, I'm looking at the world go by. Just sitting in the midday sun, just soaking up that current fun, with no particular purpose or reason, I'm sitting in the midday sun. Everybody say I'm lazy, they all tell me get a job you slug, but I'd rather be a hobo walking around with nothing than a rich man scared of losing all his got. So I'm just sitting in the midday sun, just soaking up that current bond. Why should I a stereo, radio or video, a mortgage, overdraft or bank loan. everybody says I'm dumb. But when I see the people shouting at each other, I'd rather be an out-of-work bum. So I'm just sitting in the midday sun, just soaking up that current bun, with no particular purpose or reason. I'm sitting in the midday sun.
That was the Kinks again this evening under lamplight with Sitting in the Midday Sun, the idler just soaking up that currant bun with no particular purpose or reason. Everyone calls him lazy, but in fact he's just living, watching all the neighbors looking their best in their summer dresses. True, he has no job. He's the grasshopper idling while the ants sweat all summer long. He doesn't sow hurry or reap indigestion like Stevenson's businessmen. And he is more likely to make others' lives happier if he engages them. If we think this idler is wrong, then perhaps there's something wrong with our own values. Let's be quicker to see what we can learn from him than to condemn him for being more free than we are. It's time to end this evening's visit, but let's remind ourselves in closing of one further point. The idleness we're talking about here is different from sloth. Sloth is a shirking of activity arising usually out of a form of despair. Oh, what's the use? Why bother? Is the way a slothful person sees the world. But the idler cares very much about bothering. The idler is curious about the world with the kind of curiosity that does not care about practical accomplishments, but motivated by a wonder at the world, stays mindful to see and learn about things for their own sake. And that's about all I have time to say this evening, under lamplight, about idling. Stay curious about the world, and be sure to treat others and yourself tenderly. We're not in a marketplace at such moments. Come back next time for more of Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. And how about Benny Goodman with Nice Work If You Can Get It? Work that out.